Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. We have two guests today who are helping to show the way forward for America. Our first guest is advancing a positive agenda at the state level as head of a new group called Future Now that's offering a bold agenda for the states. He'll be followed by our second guest from Indivisible, a group that's been leading the resistance to Trump and the Republican Congress at the federal level. The Indivisible group played a vital role in successfully stopping the draconian cuts to health care that Trump and the Republicans tried to push through, and Indivisible is now working to prevent the major damage that would be caused by the proposed Republican tax cuts that will overwhelmingly benefit the rich. First up is Daniel Squadron, co-founder and executive director of the new group called Future Now, which supports candidates who push for progress on ambitious, measurable goals in local state governments to drive nationwide change. He was a member of the New York State Senate from 2008 to 2017 earlier this year. Daniel Squadron, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you for having me.
So you have an exciting new group, and for our listeners who have not yet heard of it, could you describe what is the purpose of Future Now?
Sure. I launched Future Now along with Professor Jeffrey Sachs and entrepreneur Adam Pritzker in order to make progress in each of our 50 states toward America's goals, which are a set of ambitious, measurable goals that we've laid out for a brighter future for our country and for our children, one that is independent of the grip of special interests, and is the kind of society and kind of shared values that we think folks can come together around and try to break the political stalemate that we see doing so much destruction today.
It sounds very hopeful, and describe for our listeners, you talked about some of the policy goals. You've got kind of seven major sweeping, really, policy areas that you're focusing on. What are the areas you'd like to see progress on?
We do, and each of our seven goals are really shared values. We think broad shared American values. So the areas of our goals are good jobs, affordable quality health care, investing in children, empowering people over special interests, equal opportunity for all, sustainable infrastructure, resilience and innovation, and clean air, water, and energy. Now, those are, you know, those really are values, and again, I think ones that are broadly shared or should be in much of the country for many people. Each of them, though, is also specific and measurable. So each of those seven goals has three targets attached to it. For example, on affordable quality health care, the three targets measurable, let's make progress and get there, are universal affordable health coverage with a cap on out-of-pocket expenses, a life expectancy of at least 84 years, and an end to hunger in this country for 100% of households. Specific, measurable outcomes, not specific policies, but specific vision for what states should look like.
That sounds like a fabulous program, and it sounds like, you know, really every American could get behind it. It doesn't sound like it should be partisan at all. Are you thinking this could appeal to all Americans across the political spectrum?
That's certainly our hope. I mean, look, you know, we didn't pull any punches with the vision for the country. There's no room for compromise in the kind of political crisis we're in on the vision for the country. But we think that vision is a shared one. And, you know, we feel very strongly about this. On each one of our seven goals and the 21 targets, measurable targets that underlie them, there's not necessarily a single path. You know, we are not here to go into each of the 50 states and prescribe what policy or what bill will make progress in that state. What we are here to do is say it's critical that progress is made. It's critical for our democracy and for our future. And you can't claim that moving backwards actually moves us forwards. We have to be moving forwards toward this vision.
That sounds fantastic. Now, we often know there's great ideas out there, great policies, great visions, But so often the great programs get blocked by big money at both the state and federal level. How are you going to deal with this problem of big money in politics?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing, right? Because one of the problems with big money in politics is it's the most heavily invested interests, which means the ones who spend the most, but also, you know, seem to have the most to gain or lose. And, you know, the truth is it's even worse at the state level. I can tell you this, having been in the New York State Senate for 9 years. It is worse at the state level, even the federal level, the extent to which those special interests, corporate special interests, are dominating the entire conversation. And
wow.
So part of our vision and idea is let's set goals that have a much broader interest, but also let's put some real political force behind them. Get out there and convince people of their importance and roll up our sleeves and get involved in the political process and support candidates who have the biggest potential to make an impact on those goals and get with financial support and other things. Now, there's a couple things that are different, though, about us. We're going to be completely transparent about the dollars in and the dollars out, and why we're doing it. And, you know, there's another nice thing, this is one of the great things about the goals, is, you know, we talk about sort of the process of why we think this will have a political impact in states, but, of course, it also links to one of our goals themselves. You know, people of special interests, and, you know, three times. And there are to limit corporate special interest spending in politics, at least spend voter participation in fair legislative districts, and protect people's private online data by giving them personal control over it. So if these goals, if state legislators and state governments get behind these goals, will in fact reduce the influence of all money in politics, and especially that corporate special interest money that's most destructive.
Yeah, that's great. So you've woven right into your seven key goals the whole idea about limiting the power of special interests. And so you think the major way to limit special interests is going to be to limit that corporate special interest spending in campaigns. Is that right?
Absolutely. We think that's one of the key things. We actually also think, and you look at this with state legislative elections, especially turnout, you know, more people participating in our democracy is also very, very powerful. And folks knowing that when they participate, their vote will matter because they are not so unlucky as to live in a gerrymandered district where it doesn't really matter what they do because the outcome was predetermined by some political deal. You know, we think all of that is a critical piece of this. You know, and it relates to the theory here. Each of these seven goals, as I said, I think are shared values and the 21 targets, but they all relate to each other. To have a prosperous, fair, sustainable democracy, we need to be working in all these places. If someone is working, you know, good jobs, one of the goals is that 100% take-home livable wage for every job. If someone's working themselves to the bone and they're still in poverty, they still deal with issues of hunger in their home, we know that that's terrible for their health. We know that they're more likely to get disaffected from the political process. The extent to which this is an overall system and an overall vision, I think is really important for folks to take home, each of them specifically, but also all of them in total.
Great. And how did you arrive at these seven goals? Did you do polling on where you think there's going to be support, or is it based on your experience in the state legislature, or how did you arrive at these seven goals?
Well, you know, I'm really lucky to have in one of the co-founders of this effort, Professor Jeffrey Sachs, who has been a leading force for fair, smart development around the world for his entire life. And, you know, he took a lot of his own life experience, and not just that, but what he's seen is happening in other countries as our country falls behind, even though we still are the wealthiest country on earth. And his knowledge of what's happening in some states, but not happening in others. And, you know, it really aligns with a much broader vision, a vision that 195 countries have signed on to for how countries should be and making sure that our country doesn't fall behind. You know, the idea that in the wealthiest country in the world, we shouldn't be trying for each state to be the best place on earth to live is unacceptable. And so these goals are based on a whole lifetime of work and a framework where this country shouldn't be falling behind. You know, a great example of that is investing in children as the goal. One of the targets on that is 100% completion of a quality K-12 education. Everyone gets a quality high school degree. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, some folks say, well, in this country we can't get there or even approach it. You know, obviously always an actual 100 is hard, but even approaching it. And, of course, you know, lots of countries around the world have committed to this, you know, that have a fraction of the wealth we do, have a fraction of the democratic processes that, you know, we do and we're now having to defend every day. And so the idea that those other countries would commit to this goal by 2030, but some states in our country wouldn't, you know, offends me, frankly, as someone who thinks that this country has great potential.
Right, exactly. We have amazing potential. There's so much we need to do and could do, but it seems like one of the biggest problems is because of the big money impact on both the state and the federal government that so many of the benefits accrue to the top 1%. Maybe I missed it, but you know, how do you see funding these goals? And I don't see anything here about more fair or more progressive taxation to be able to pay the bills for the wonderful program you've laid out.
Right. Well, you know, an important thing of the goals is it's about the outcomes, right? And obviously to get to the outcomes, you know, tough decisions have to be made. And, you know, it's really important to us to leave it up to states to figure out their own path based on their own circumstances. You're talking about an issue of the fiscal challenges. There are other issues as well. The starting point, you know, the truth is, in, you know, states with a starting point of a life expectancy, you know, that's you know, particularly bad relative to our national average, are going to have a different set of solutions in their policy toolbox than a state that's already at 81 or 82 years. So that's an important point. You know, your point, though, about money is a really interesting one. And it's interesting for the reasons we talked about before, sort of the dark money, the corporate money that especially at the state level in ways that I think would shock your listeners. And I, you know, I've got 9 years of scars to prove it, just really control states. But the other piece of that that's so important is a lot of that money goes to claim things that simply aren't true in two categories. One, you know, they'll do things like say, you know, we'll improve your health care by cutting it. Right? Just, you know, bizarre Orwellian statements like that get made. A huge amount of effort is put behind trying to convince people of that. And, you know, without a framework, without a set of goals, you know, the facts can sometimes get lost in the noise. Because when you're talking about a single policy fight, the facts get lost in the noise. Our view is, show us how you're going to make progress on the goals with this policy. We're going to do some independent assessment of it. And we're going to talk about the facts here relative to our values, not some fight over a single piece of legislation. That's the first. But the second is also true, which is when you talk about facts in politics or in the public sphere, one thing that a lot of folks will try to convince you of is things just aren't possible. You know, we're doing in this country as well as we can. Despite all the frustration people have, all the, you know, true anger they do and should have about how corrupt our politics is, despite the fact that whether it's on life expectancy or the ability to get a college degree without being burdened by debt for a generation afterwards, or the number of people who have the chance to vote when elections come around, we're doing as well as we can already. It would be great to do better, but it's just not realistic. And that is, frankly, a scam and a lie. And it's one that has taken hold because it's true that in our current political environment, it's hard to pass bills to improve things. That is true. But it's not because the ideas aren't out there, the solutions aren't out there, other countries without nearly the resources we have aren't moving forward, or even in some cases, states have figured it out. It's because there are special interests that don't want anyone to believe it's true. And that is a major lie that we think these goals are well organized to combat.
You know, you're so right, and I actually believe we have solutions to every single problem that we face in this country now at the state and federal level. I spent 20 years going around the United States looking for the best of what's working in America and wrote it up in a book called Breakthrough Solutions, How to Improve Your Life and Change the World by Building on What Works. And model after model in every area, in energy, in education, in healthcare, we have these solutions, but it seems like they, you know, we keep getting blocked on implementing those solutions for exactly what you're saying, the deep corruption at the state and federal level. So it would seem to me that's going to be, you know, first and foremost what we take on. So I'm glad you're calling out the lie that we're doing the best we can. Of course, we're not doing the best we can. This country is the wealthiest country ever in the history of humanity. We can solve all these problems. So I'm thrilled that you've got a bold agenda with measurable steps to be taken towards achieving the changes that we need to help lift the country.
Eleanor, such a great point. And you know, you talk about your work finding best practices. You know, one of my favorite examples of this is the state of Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. You know, which is a state with a lot of challenges. In Oklahoma, one of our goals, one of our targets is to have 100% of four-year-olds have access to pre-K and early childhood services. And in the state of Oklahoma, 74% of four-year-olds are already doing that. Even in a state like Oklahoma that has a lot of other challenges, they have been really forward-thinking and effective on this. It's not a red state or a blue state challenge or a state, you know, that's relatively wealthier or less wealthy. It's a challenge of policy and of galvanizing the electorate, whether Democrat, Republican, Independent, or uninvolved.
Right, exactly. Well, this is very exciting what you're up to here, and you're just beginning. I know you just launched last month, October, at the State Information Exchange Conference with all the gathering of the state legislators. So how would you describe Future Now? Is it an organization, a campaign, a network, or how do you define it?
Right. So Future Now USA, and that's our website, by the way, futurenowusa.org, is an effort that has an electoral component to try to win majorities in state legislatures that will make progress towards these goals in an honest way in their states. And there's a communications component to get the word out there, and we hope folks will come to our website for third component, which is a pledge. And it's a pledge we're asking legislators across the country, but also individuals across the country to sign, to say, I will work in my state to help achieve America's goals by 2030. There's a list of goals at futurenowusa.org. Anyone can go and sign the pledge. And, you know, that speaks to the final piece, and then we're almost out of time, which is people and citizens have such more ability to impact state government than I think they've ever realized. Because so often, and this is true in New York, state government has been left to the small number of vested special interests, regular people think it's just not possible for them to have an impact. But the opposite is true. If even a small number of people get more involved in their state governments, in their state elections, in the arguments that are being made and often not being made by anyone because it's only the special interests up there in the state capitol lobbying and walking the halls, they can have an outsized impact. I know how frustrating the national politics can be. I know how disturbing and often terrifying the presidential reality and politics are right now and how powerless people feel about that. At the state level, people's influence, regular individuals' influence is vastly outsized. And that's why we're asking not just elected officials and candidates, but also individuals to sign the pledge to achieve America's goals.
You are so right about that. And if people only understood the power that we have, particularly at the state and local level, it does not take too many people organized at the state and local level to really have an impact. I've run some campaigns as a campaign manager and helped a friend get elected to the state legislature in a special election. I believe the turnout in that election was only 10% of the registered voters. So,
right.
You know, a small number of people can have a big impact in terms of both who is elected into office and then to use your voice in between elections to let your legislators know what you think about a particular legislation or tell them what you want to be see done. And your seven policy goals here seem to be a great scorecard that people can use to measure their legislators.
I have to tell you, you know, my 9 years in office in the state Senate, I originally won by beating a 30-year incumbent, and it was 2008, and there was obviously a lot of enthusiasm, you know, and energy in the air that year for elections. But, you know, after that, I have to say that for years, you know, people would be polite about being in the state legislature, and there were certainly some folks in my district who really needed support and help, and it was an incredible honor to be able to serve them and help them. But overall, the level of cynicism and lack of interest in state government was really striking. And, you know, I saw something after last November, and it's continued right up for a year, and I hope it continues for a lot longer, which is a level of enthusiasm and interest and understanding that folks needed to have a bigger impact in their communities, in their politics, in order to save the future and start making a big impact now. And, you know, that, I don't know if you've seen that same thing, but that level of excitement and energy and willingness to get involved is exactly the right thing. And what we need is we need folks to maintain that, to get their friends and neighbors who might not yet have gotten excited involved. And that is how we're going to impact these things. You know, as a former legislator, I can tell you the best thing, the best way to make a difference is when you have a group of your constituents come to you and say, this is important to us, and you can be sure we're going to stay on you about it, as opposed to the legislators saying, here's the right thing to do, and you all better listen to me. As a state legislator, that's not how it works. You get driven by your constituents. And as you say, a relatively small number are actually the ones who define the conversation.
Exactly right. And I am seeing the same thing as you are. A lot more excitement, a lot more energy, a lot more people going, you know, oh my God, what's happening in America? I didn't vote. I haven't been engaged. I have to get involved now. And to have just the day after the inauguration this January, 3 million people mobilized in the streets at the Women's March, and then this past weekend having 4,000 people show up at the Women's Convention going, okay, time to get organized to help save America. So this is definitely a great moment for the revival of citizen activism in the country. It is the one and only thing that will save the country, but as people wake up and get engaged, I think they're going to start to discover the power that you're talking about that they already have and just have not used.
That's absolutely right. And as you know, there's actually a very important election coming up on Tuesday in Virginia, you know, in addition to the gubernatorial election, which I know has gotten a lot of focus appropriately. Also, the higher Virginia House of Delegates is up for election. And one thing that we've done at Future Now is we've actually endorsed and given support to 10 challengers running in Virginia to try to flip the majority there from a majority that has stood in the way of the expansion of health care, has stood in the way of protecting and allowing voting rights, and try to create a new majority in that House with these, you know, starting with these 10 really inspiring individuals, many of them are first-time candidates, so I think this time last year would have said we were crazy to say that in a year they'd be running for office, to make progress on the goals when they reorganize and get into session next year.
That's fantastic. And, you know, with this election coming up on Tuesday in Virginia, a lot of people are looking to the Virginia elections as a bellwether for the country, a kind of one of the first major statewide voting since the election of Trump and the Republicans in the House and the Senate at the federal level. So I think it's going to be critically important to elect good people there in Virginia. So any of our listeners there who live in Virginia, make sure you get out and vote on next Tuesday.
Absolutely. You know, it's an interesting thing about these odd year elections, literally odd year, which is, you know, many fewer people vote. You know, the kind of high watermark for voting tends to come in the presidential years, and then those midterms are down and the odd years are down, special elections are even down from that. And, you know, who votes, who's given the right to vote when they try to, but also who chooses to determines so many of these outcomes. And, you know, that's what we see in these 10 races. You know, if you could match even the presidential turnout, which, you know, is very difficult to do, you would have a sea change in the state of Virginia. You'd have a House of Delegates that, instead of fighting against a 70% voter turnout and actually fighting the governor on it, would be working towards it instead of fighting against expanding health care, I said Medicare, for Medicaid, excuse me, for folks who need it. would be working hand in hand to make that happen. Instead of believing that folks who work full time should also need to be on public assistance, which costs taxpayer dollars, believe that people who work full time should be able to take home enough to support themselves and their families. All of these things are determined not as much by who's convinced as they are by who votes. Most people are convinced of these things. Unfortunately, that doesn't always align with who comes out and votes in any single election.
Yeah, it's very powerful. So we absolutely are, I think, people recognizing the vital importance of everyone to get out and vote. And our listeners tend to be a very active group of people. If they're interested in learning more about what you're doing with Future Now, or interested in getting more involved, what should they do?
A number of things I would like them to do. We would love folks to go to futurenowusa.org and read about the goals. There's all kinds of information about why these goals are not just important but also realistic. If you believe in them and you're excited about them, sign the pledge to achieve them, and we'll be in touch. Certainly, if you live in Virginia or New Jersey or any of the places where special elections happening, important ones happening in Washington State, absolutely be sure to go out and vote. And please do another thing, which is if you have questions about the goals, why is this in there, why isn't the other, send us an email about it, because it's really about empowering individuals to get excited, figure out how to create political power around not just a single issue or a single bill next year, but around a shared vision for our country for a better future starting now. And that is about really engaging folks about these goals and about why it is that states, often small world of state government, can achieve these very big goals in our country and give each of your listeners and everyone else out there in this country a much bigger voice than I think maybe in this cynical time they thought possible.
Very good. And you mentioned about endorsing state legislators who sign on to this wonderful program you've got laid out. What support does Future Now give to the candidates when they're running? Do you give them money, volunteers, help with campaign management? And what kind of accountability do you have once they're endorsed and elected?
Right. So, we're asking state legislators across the country, across parties, to sign on to the pledge. That's step one. Among those candidates who sign on, it's going to be an important factor. We're also going to look at their own leadership qualities, their own histories, policy histories, to make sure that they have a true affinity for and really will work toward the goals, and that they're in a position to make a difference in their state legislature if elected, either in the makeup of the legislature or through their own kind of leadership qualities. And for those candidates that we endorse and get behind, in the case of Virginia, we contributed to their campaigns, both individually and through our donor network, and have gotten to know them, have worked with them. And next year, when we get started earlier in the process, we want to work hand in hand. When you're a new candidate, there's so much you need. You know why you're running. You know what your values are. But often knowing which policies will have the biggest impact on those values can be hard. And so we're going to work with candidates and with other partner organizations to try to fill that out in a way that lets candidates do what candidates should be doing, which is being out there meeting voters, explaining themselves, introducing themselves as much as possible.
Fantastic. And speaking of the most important actions and policies, what would you say, I know you co-authored the Positively American, Winning Back the Middle Class Majority, One Family at a Time, with Senator Chuck Schumer. What would you say are the top one or two things we need to do to strengthen the middle class?
I think that I'm very proud of that book, and folks should check it out if they're interested. But, I think that these goals in this moment, in this political crisis, again, not just over the next year, but I think they could have an impact over the next year, but certainly over the next decade, are something that would do that. It's about making work pay and giving you a reasonable life if you work hard and play by the rules. It's about making sure that losing your job doesn't mean losing your life earlier. It means that our kids will be ready for an ever-changing economy. It means that we will have clean, safe water, which used to be something that folks could take for granted. In too many places in this country, they no longer can. So, you know, I think these goals are a great place to start for the middle class. And, you know, I encourage folks to go to futurenowusa.org and consider for themselves. But in this moment, I feel very proud of these goals as a path to a restored middle class.
That's wonderful, and that's all the time we have. Daniel Squadron, thank you so much for being with us today and for all you're doing for America.
Thank you for the time. It was great to talk to you. Hope to do it again.